Here I am, I'm sitting with... No, welcome to the Eden Gathering Podcast. We absolutely love having your ears listening to my voice and my guest's voice as you go about your day. Maybe you're listening to us as you go to sleep. Some of our podcasts are good to go to sleep to, but I think this is going to be one that you're going to want to stick on in the car. You're going to want to laugh. You're going to want to cry. You're going to want to invest in your relationship with the living Jesus Christ. And that is all because I am sat with the best Fenning.
That's well done. Nice intro.
Definitely the best S.
Did you not
Fenning.
Say that to my children as well, though?
I
have a feeling you've done that before.
No. You must have misheard that. I must have been talking about you.
Yes.
So, who are you?
I'm Sarah Fenning. I'm married to Steve Fenning.
Steve
the great
Fenning.
Steve Fenning.
And how long have you been married?
17 years.
That's
which sounds like a
effort.
Thing now, I think. 17 years sounds like something.
Sounds like you can't get out of it. That sounds like...
Yeah,
that's
kind
a good
of locked
innings.
In.
Yeah, that's like you've got your eye in... You're gonna like
and you're waiting for good things to happen on the 20th anniversary.
Oh yeah,
like eternity ring.
What does that look like for you?
An eternity ring. Just saying.
Yeah, you can never buy women enough rings, can you? That's exactly what Kat said to me. I got down on one knee, give her the engagement ring. Then you got to buy a wedding ring. Wedding ring. Then you got to buy an eternity ring. What's it after the eternity ring?
Just more rings, I think.
I mean, she'll look like Mr. T by the time we've been in 25 years of marriage.
But she'll be happy and she'll still be married to you.
So what, do rings make you happy then? Surely
really.
Steve's character and his, I don't know what Steve got going for him. Lots of things.
He has got lots of things going for him. I just think you could do with a ring as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I always think I made a bit of a mistake with my engagement ring. There was a misunderstanding.
Okay.
Because he'd been asking me to marry him kind of in general conversation for ages and I wasn't ready.
Right.
And so I...
So how do you bring that up in general conversation? So you want to marry me or...
He told me he was falling in love with me the day after our first date.
Oh, that's cute.
I freaked out. I completely freaked out and he just went at that pace from then on.
Yeah.
And so it was just me saying, no.
But you didn't take the hint.
No. And then eventually I went shopping with my mother, just looking at engagement rings.
Yeah.
And so we had a look and that's all good fun. Mm-hmm. And we kind of wrote down a few that I liked in the shop and that sort of thing. And then I told him that I'd done that. And for him, that was like the green light.
Right.
So he thought, right,
I think
I'll
I would
see
out. That as a green light.
Well, it was.
Yeah.
But he thought, right, which ring was it? But that was just like the first look
right.
at rings. So he thought I'd set my heart on this particular ring, which I hadn't.
Okay.
And then when he gives it to you, you just kind of, you can't really say, yeah, but not that one.
Yeah, but not that.
So my ring's
did
a bit
he do the whole
boring.
One knee thing in the end?
Oh, two knees. It's one of the worst proposals.
Go on. We haven't heard this.
Have
you
happy
to share this?
Oh, yeah. he's terrified of what I'm going to say.
And he should be.
It's a dangerous thing, me in front of a microphone. Yeah. I'm not normally allowed. We were sitting on the carpet in the living room in his house, but it was disgusting, that carpet. It was brown, dark brown, so that it hid everything. So
right,
you
yeah,
never
yeah.
worried what fell on that carpet. That
yeah,
was
yeah.
the only good thing about it. So we were yeah. sitting there, had the electric fire on because it was November and it was horrible outside. And he put on a song from... Pearl Harbor, which was the film that we went to see on our first date.
Wait, you saw Pearl Harbor, the war film,
on our
first date.
And then he took me for a kebab. First date. I should have known.
I wonder why you're reluctant to say.
So yeah, the proposal was, the other thing was that he'd tricked me before in about a month into our relationship by pretending to propose.
Oh, right.
And then saying, Sarah, look, there's something, I know we haven't been together very long, but there's something I want to ask you. And I was going, what? Freak. And then he said, do you prefer chips or curry?
Oh.
I know. It was in an airport in France. So then I was on my guard. So when he actually proposed, I thought he was doing the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I kind of ruined my own moment because I was going, So no, but someone I always tell Steve that someone I could have married took his girlfriend, flew her up in a helicopter, landed on a glacier, proposed to her on the glacier. The pilot had the champagne ice. I know, I mention that often.
But he was on the brown carpet. Front of the electric fire and you thought it was a joke.
And I thought it was a joke, yeah.
So what did you respond?
Oh, I kind of said yes. And then and then we sort of rang people. But it's not like, it wasn't movie quality.
Did he ask your dad, do you think?
He had asked him.
Yeah, that's good.
I think so, yeah.
And dad, I think that takes a gent. Alex, give me a nod. Did you ask Beth's dad? Because Alex is married.
Is he?
Yeah, don't know if you know. But then we have a bit of
I might have been at
podcast.
His wedding.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing cake.
Do you know,
amazing cake.
My wife got punched in the eye.
At Alex's wedding.
Alex's wedding.
By
he
who?
Got a black eye. I can't name him on the podcast.
I think you should.
It was a guy called Callum McDonald.
Was he? What was he doing? Apart from punching, why was he punching?
I'm
going to
say dancing. But it was so aggressive. Was it to Baby Shark? Baby Shark was on. Do you know Baby Shark?
I do.
And there was just fists flying.
Oh my
and
word.
All of a sudden, my wife was like, I've been punched. And Callum was like, I'm so sorry. And she got a black eye.
Wow.
So
that's impressive.
Yeah. So how do you feel about being on the podcast? You listen to the podcast. You don't have to.
Yeah. I've listened to a few. I've listened to some of the ones with my children in them.
Which is your favourite? Not child. We all know that. One
Rachel.
Podcast.
I was listening. I like the siblings one.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was wondering if you'd listen to that, because that could get some...
I know, dangerous.
Yeah, like, I can see why Steve's scared about you being on, because one of the things I love about you is your honesty.
I will tell you a lot of things. Ask me anything.
What could we ask? What is...
I've got loads of stories. Some of them I'm saving for Sam's wedding.
Okay.
But I could...
Have we got any update on the Sam wedding situation?
Well, he's told me that him and Liza have both got... help to buy ices.
Oh,
so I can't.
That's more committed than married.
Exactly.
I've got help to buy ice though.
Oh,
that means nothing.
What for? What are you hoping to buy?
Nothing. Well, I'd like a house one day.
Have you not got one?
No.
You're renting.
Yeah. Oh. I'm stuck in that cycle.
Yes.
Again, that goes back to the whole we had. Was that on air that we spoke about having a plan with children? And then,
baby.
No, that wasn't
then,
on air.
And then
but we moved in to my parent-in-law's house to save. And then JJ
arrived.
Happened a bit sooner than we expected. And then we moved out and I'm now stuck renting forever. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
It's not, although we could.
Yeah, but we are here to talk about Velvet Elvis.
Yes.
So this is Book Club. Oh, I haven't introduced the theme tune. Alex, play the theme tune to Book Club.
Let's talk about books with Ben. Let's talk about now and then. Let's talk about all the good books and the bad books that we've read. Let's talk about books. Yeah.
That goes in afterwards. It's all very clever. Velvet Elvis.
Yeah.
Now, I've been waiting to get someone to talk about some books like this. A little bit controversial, a little bit... Well, it's Rob Bell, isn't it?
It is Rob Bell.
Can you tell us a little bit about Rob Bell?
Yes, I can. I mean, I'm not very well informed. You'd have to look him up yourself.
Yeah. Do your homework, people.
He's American. He started a church called Mars Hill in, I always want to say California, but it absolutely isn't California. It's somewhere a lot less glamorous. Anyway.
I wouldn't say like...
I bet it says on here.
Oh, Colorado?
Anyway. Oh, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
not important, but he's just...
He's a bit controversial.
He's
written some books that a lot of Christians...
Disagree with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why do people get so angry with Rob Bell?
Well, and also throw the baby out with the bathwater. So just because he said something they disagree with, they won't listen to anything that he said, which I think is a mistake because... And in fact, the funny thing is that he has taught me not to worry about stuff like that.
Mm.
So actually from Velvet Elvis, which changed my faith.
Wow.
And you can't say that about every book, can you?
No.
So I've read it a few times, and I do it as a like a study book when I'm doing a small group.
Oh, cool.
So especially, particularly if I'm doing like a post-alpha group, a new Christians group.
Right, yeah.
I think every Christian should read it.
Hmm.
Every Christian.
I've never read it.
Well, I'm going to sell it to you now.
Yeah, I mean, but I do often think, oh, I'm going to read that after the podcast.
And then you and just I've, don't.
To yeah. this day, I haven't. But I have heard of, I think this is the first book we've done that I've definitely heard of.
Oh.
And definitely, I think, have tried to read.
Oh, really? You've already started it?
I mean, not. I mean, it's older. It's an older book, right? It's not.
Yeah, I don't know when it was published.
Probably like 10 years old.
At least, yeah.
And yeah, so Rob Bell is kind of like this guy that is a bit controversial, but he goes right back into the Hebrew roots of some of this,
yes,
of some of the biblical texts. He's a pastor, but I think he's studied under rabbis and stuff, hasn't he?
Yes,
he's
knows
a great
a lot.
Speaker, thinker, very. Does a lot of secular work as well. I think I've seen him with like Oprah.
Oh, really?
And yeah, he's kind of been, I guess, a bit rejected by the church now, by the mainstream church. But for me, he's one of the best thinkers and theologians out
yeah.
there.
And I like what he says somewhere. I'm going to quote from the book now because I was having a little refresh before I did this. And one of the things he says is, this book is for those who need a fresh take on Jesus and what it means to live the kind of life he teaches us.
That we all need.
How
that.
To live. Yeah, and it is really refreshing. It wakes you up.
So when did you first come across this book?
I can't remember. I can't remember because I was asking Steve about that yesterday and thinking I can't remember the first time I read it now.
But what sort of like, so you, when you say it like changed your faith, where were you at before you read this book?
I was in a good place, yeah. good solid place.
Yeah.
But like a lot of Christians, I think, I was quite worried about talking to people about faith.
Mm.
So I was worried that I didn't know enough.
Yeah.
And that I didn't have answers for things and that my faith could be shaken by a clever question.
Mm.
That's kind of worried me, you know. What if someone says something to me and I can't answer it and I don't know. And since reading this and reading it more than once and reading it in a group with people and hearing their responses, that's taken that away.
Mm.
More than taken it away. It's made me go towards the questions and the discussions.
Wow.
And that's a lovely place to be. It's it's lovely to have that confidence. And this book and Rob Bell have given me that.
So what is it about?
Well, it's called Velvet Elvis because...
It's quite a confusing title, isn't it?
It is. It's because, and I can't remember exactly, I didn't reread the introduction, but basically I think he went down into a basement somewhere and he found a picture of Elvis painted on velvet. And so...
I love Elvis, hate velvet.
Well...
Do you know that about me?
No.
That is honestly, like for me, we did it on a previous podcast, but like mint, aero, chocolate...
Oh, yes.
...and velvet are two of... Satan's own inventions, in my humble opinion.
Now, is the mint aero because of the texture?
No, so it's because mint is for brushing your teeth.
Ah, yes. That's so right, because there was a big debate about that, wasn't there? Yeah, I'm not really with you on that. I'm halfway there. I mean, I see your point.
Yeah.
I do see your point. But then you'd have to give up after eights.
Yeah, and like, they're gone.
No.
They shouldn't be a thing. And even, so like, even the time on after eights isn't right. On the,
what, on the clock?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It's like 3 minutes past eight.
Well, exactly.
It's like one, make it like 1 minute past eight. Why? Then that'd be after eight.
Well, I bet there was a big meeting about that, don't you? Don't you reckon?
I bet there was hours of debate about it.
Yep.
So, yeah, but I hate velvet because it looks... It's just wrong.
Are you going to be able to get past this?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean,
can
like...
Can we continue?
Some of my best friends in the world have a velvet sofa and it looks good in their living room.
Can you sit on it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's comfortable.
So you're already moving through this, aren't you? You're already
I see a therapist,
making
so
progress.
I can do this.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So this is part of your journey, let's
part
say.
Part of my healing.
Yeah, it is part of
my route
healing.
Back to velvet.
Good. Okay, well, I'm
and I love Elvis.
I'm proud to be part of that. Anyway.
Yeah.
So he finds this painting of Elvis, and it's really irrelevant actually that it's Elvis. He just says, what if, I think it occurred to him, what if the artist had finished painting Elvis, put his brush down and said, well, that's it. No one ever needs to paint Elvis again. I have finished. Mm. You know, no one ever needs to do that. And he said, instantly, we all understand, well, that's ridiculous. Of course, it can be reinterpreted. Of course, that subject can be looked at again from a different angle. There's kind of endless room for that.
Yeah.
And so he says this book is his Velvet Elvis. He says that we need to reinterpret the Christian faith, repaint the Christian faith is
That's
how he
good.
Puts it. Yeah.
I'm already intrigued. So what are his main... So does he like address preconceptions or does he go on like... Forget everything you know about Jesus.
No, neither. He's it's even fresher than that in a way, because then the next, he doesn't have chapters, he has what they call movements, and movement one is called Jump. And he talks about a time he took his children out onto the trampoline and they did this trick where he was bouncing. And you know how if a child catches the bounce of an adult and then they go flying.
Yeah.
Steve used to do that with, I feared for the life of our children and our neighbor's children. But that's what he was doing. And he called his wife out to come and look. And she watched it happen and said, that's probably not very safe. And probably they should not do that anymore.
Yeah.
And he said, and we didn't until she went in. But I think, again, it's another of those moments where it occurred to him that that's what faith should be like.
Mm.
So he, and it's an image that stayed with me and that stayed with other people who've done the book with me. What he says is that the trampoline is attached to the frame by springs.
Mm.
And the springs stretch and give, but they are not the main thing. So the main, like the core of your faith would be Jesus was the Son of God.
Yeah. The resurrection happened?
Yes. However, what he calls the springs are things that are important, but they're not the center.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the actual trampoline. They are. And they can flex and they can move. So he says, and this is where it's a bit controversial, he says the Trinity, for example, is not, a lot of people that would be core.
Mm.
He says it's not actually a concept that's mentioned as such in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's something that people came up with later. And he doesn't say it doesn't exist or anything, but what he says is the interpretation of it can bear discussion. It can move, you can look at it, you can think about it, you can turn it upside down and have a talk about it. And he says as well, which has given a lot of people a wobble when we've got this far in the book, he says, let's say it turned out that Jesus had an actual human father called Larry. And it turned out that the word for virgin just meant someone who got pregnant the first time they had sex. Mm. And that was sort of taken and proved.
Yeah.
And so he says, what happens to your faith then? Does that destroy your faith? Or is that one of the springs? Can your faith survive that, basically? And so he's looking at all the things that are not the core and saying your faith can cope.
Mm.
And if one spring went and your whole faith went, then to be honest, it probably wasn't that strong anyway.
Yeah.
And he compares this kind of springy faith where you've got some give to the opposite, which he calls brick wall Christians, where every brick is crucial to the structure of the wall. So if you remove one brick, then the wall collapses.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's no room for discussion because you can't move that brick.
Mm.
It will collapse.
Yeah.
So brick wall Christians can't tolerate any discussion. It's just, well, the Bible says so, or, you know, no, this is what I believe. And they're kind of more insecure in a way.
Yeah.
The rigidity makes them insecure.
So, which is why you avoid questions.
Yeah.
And don't lean
and you
into
kind of blanket.
Because,
I'm not going there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know what to say and it threatens me.
Yeah. So does he give you the fundamentals or is that a journey that you have to go on yourself?
Yeah, no, it's a journey you have to go on yourself.
Mm.
He's quite encouraging. He's very affirming. He's very positive. So the way I've said it now makes it sound a bit threatening almost, but he just asks lots of questions.
Yeah.
And one of the things he says with a wall is, what do you do with a wall? You defend it. Mm. And so you put yourself in that position. He said, actually, with a trampoline, what do? You invite someone to jump with you.
Mm.
And And so it's just a change of attitude. Rather than being afraid of questions, you get so it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's got, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it and that is a place of security, isn't it?
It is. And flexibility.
To hold everything lightly.
Yes.
Other than, yeah, so I think for me, without having thought about it beforehand,
yeah,
I'll argue for the death and the resurrection and that Jesus was the Son of God.
Yeah, as being core.
Yeah, and probably the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
Although I probably couldn't put language to that intelligently.
But you haven't had a chance to think about it, have you?
Yeah, but yeah. Everything else.
It can flex.
Yeah.
And I think that's
But that
the
is
thing.
A recent thing for that. That's for me, when I started sharing that I felt that way.
Yeah.
People saw that as an immaturity in my faith.
Interesting.
But I always saw it as a maturity.
Yeah.
Because I had the least answers I've ever had, rather than the most.
Yeah.
But it's taken me to a long while without having read the book, but it's echoing a bit of my journey and my story, I think. You know, I mean, we sit here on the podcast and I hold things lightly and with springs and stuff. And I think it's often seen as an immaturity rather than a
it's seen as you not having made up your mind, I think.
Yeah.
And it's that, well, you should know.
Mm.
And actually, Rob Bell is very good at taking what we have all kind of swallowed without critiquing. And someone said, you should do this. And we've all gone, okay. Mm. And he's said, hang on a minute. So one of the things he says is someone came up to him once and said, as long as you teach the Bible, I have no problem with you.
All right.
And he said, let's just talk about that statement for a minute. What you mean is, as long as I teach your version of the Bible. Yeah. And he talks about interpretation. One of the main themes of the book is how important it is, and it's the Velvet Elvis idea, to wrestle with the Bible, to look at the verses and the context and what it means. And you've got to make that relevant and make it applicable for us in the 21st century in Suffolk. That's a very different thing.
Mm.
We can't pretend that the Bible is without filters, like that we read it without filters. You know, I read it differently according to my experience, my gender, my, you know, my race, everything.
Yeah.
And he's very good at saying that's important. It's an essential process. You cannot just say the Bible says and leave it at that. You've got to go into that a bit more, and you've got to talk about that a bit more.
Which is why he's criticized.
Well, heavily, partly, I think a lot of it, if you're honest with yourself and you listen, it just makes you more open-minded.
Mm.
Can I read you
a please.
Bit? I've got this.
I'm just going to
get comfortable.
Take a sip of water so that Alex doesn't have to edit out. I'll just call it out on that because he's going to make it glug, glug, glug.
No burping. I wondered if this would be a good thing for Eden, actually, because he talks about his church hosting something they call Doubt Night.
Oh.
I know. So is it all right to read this a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love to.
One of the things that's nice about his book is that a lot of the paragraphs are one sentence long.
Mm.
They're one line long. So it is quite nice and easy. But he said, we sponsored a doubt night at our church a while back. People were encouraged to write down whatever questions or doubts they had about God and Jesus and the Bible and faith and church. We had to get a large box to hold all those scraps of paper. The first question was from a woman who'd been raped and didn't press charges because she was told that doing so wasn't the Christian thing to do. The man then raped several other girls, and this woman wanted to know if God would still forgive her, even if she hadn't forgiven the man who raped her. Did I mention this was the first question? Here are a few more asked that night. Why does God let people die so young? Why does it seem that mean people get the most money? Why does the killer go free and the honest man die of cancer? Sometimes I doubt God's presence in starving Africa. If we can ask God for forgiveness at our last breath, why strive for a godly life in the present? Either God is in control of everything, and so all the crap we see today is part of his plan, which I don't want to accept, or it's all out of control, which sucks too. What's up? This is just a random sampling. I have page after page of questions on my desk. Heaven and hell and suicide and the devil and God and love and rape. Some very personal, some angry, some desperate, some very deep and philosophical. Most of my responses were about how we need others to carry our burdens and how our real needs in life are not for more information, but for loving community with other people on the journey. But what was so powerful for those I spoke with was that they were free to voice what was deepest in their hearts and minds. Questions, doubts, struggles. It wasn't the information that helped them. It was simply being in an environment in which they were free to voice what was inside. And he says, questions, no matter how shocking or blasphemous or arrogant or ignorant or raw, are rooted in humanity. Oh, sorry, humility. A humility that understands that I am not God and there is more to know. And that reminded me of what you were saying just now, that actually it's seen as immaturity, but actually what it is humility. It's, I don't know all the answers. That makes you a more mature Christian because you're understanding that there's a God outside of you.
So you actually feel a hell of a lot better about myself.
Yeah, and you will. You should read it.
So how can, in your opinion, how can the church do better at creating space like you've just spoken about?
What, doubt night kind of thing?
Yeah. Because it's not Sundays. Is it Sunday? Like what? How would you approach that?
I like the idea of doubt night.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, a lot of people, they don't want their faith shaken up. You know, they're happy with it how it is. Yeah. And I think it's how you market it in a way. So I liked how he said it's a fresh take on Jesus. It's not controversial for the sake of being controversial. Yeah. It's controversial because it questions things that we have been too lazy or too indoctrinated to question before. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's freed me. It's made me feel confident. It's made me feel joyful.
Yeah.
And stronger. It's made my faith stronger. And I actually don't think you need to be a Christian to read this book, because I think if you are, I heard this great phrase the other day, it was called spiritually curious. I thought that's a good one, because a lot of people would put themselves in that bracket.
Yeah, definitely.
I was thinking about inviting people to Alpha. And it's kind of awkward when you say, well, it's an introduction to the Christian faith, because people think, well, I don't really need that in my life. But if you ask them, are you spiritually curious? Gosh, there's a lot of people I think would say yes.
Yeah, that's so true. So and we could change our language around some stuff.
And that's, he does a lot of that in here. He does a lot of, this is what it's like to talk about. One of the things he said that's changed what I think about the Bible is that he said nobody, and I mean, people know this, but nobody had a copy, their own personal copy of the Bible. Yeah. So the idea that I was brought up with, that you should read the Bible on your own, in a corner, preferably in a kind of beam of sunlight. In a white dress.
In a rocking chair.
Yeah. Is kind of nonsense.
Birds chirping.
Yes.
In the background.
Because that's not how it was ever done. It used to be done in the synagogue.
Yeah.
So you would have somebody read some of the verses and then everybody would, you know, stick their two penneth in and say what they thought. And if somebody, it stopped people from going off on wild tangents. But also it let other people, you had all these different angles, just like we do in a small group, you know. And so for me, that made so much sense. Like, of course you should take the Bible out like that and examine it and talk about it and talk about what it means.
It sounds like a pretty fresh approach to faith in community.
Yes.
And,
oh, there's so much good stuff in
here. Yeah, and I think there's a responsibility, like, for us as church leaders and churchgoers, because it's not just the leaders that have to deal with these questions. No. It's your friend at the fish and chip shop is never to be shocked by these questions.
Exactly.
Because nothing shocks God. There's no question that can shock God. And I always say to, like, I lead a group of young people at the Forge, and I say, honestly, there is nothing that you can say that will shock me. And I like to think that's true, and I do think it is, but I often think we can get, as church leadership, or just as Christians, because we've got these brick walls, we get so scared of have like some questions aren't answerable in my opinion. You can't give a black and white answer to the question that is written on the paper, but maybe an understanding of why the question is asked will give you a better response to give.
Yeah.
Because actually, I often find that they don't want an answer to the question. They want to be heard
about I agree.
Their frustrations.
Yeah, I agree. And doing alpha a lot has taught me that.
Yeah.
You've got to listen to the question behind the question.
Yeah.
If it's a question about suffering, you've got to work out, do they really need to hear a long theological explanation or do they need a hug?
Yeah.
And yeah, you've got to work out, sometimes something will masquerade as one thing. Actually, it's really connected to something else.
So good.
Yeah.
And oh man, I feel amazing.
You are amazing. There's loads of stuff in here. I mean, I can't, sometimes you recommend books and it's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
This book, I really would, it's not that long. I've heard, Sam told me that you compare every book to Harry Potter.
We do, yeah.
So this is 177 pages.
But some of the paragraphs are one word. Yep. And like, if it's like any other Rob Bell book, like the spacing is like ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, so there's
there
one,
be four words
there's
on a page.
One page where there's a line with two words on it. Then the next line has six words on it. The next line has four words on it. It goes on like that. So it's not a difficult book to read.
I feel
read.
Like a reader could do that in a day.
Yeah.
A non-reader could do it.
The only thing,
easily.
The only thing that happens is there's so much to think about that you can't go.
But do it
fast.
As community then. Is there a resource out there for
I'm
like
sure
to go
there
with
is.
It, or do you just like read it together and you just like create discussion around it, or discussions naturally created around
I
it?
I have never used resources with it, but that's just because that's not really my style.
No.
But I'm pretty sure that there
There'll
would be,
there.
Yeah, because it's been around long enough and. Yeah, but I would suggest doing it as part of a group.
Mm.
But because I think I've probably got more out of it that way.
Yeah.
Once you discuss something with somebody, you learn stuff. It gives the things that you learn a little bit more weight and importance because you all discover a truth together.
Yeah.
And then, I've done it repeatedly in small groups.
Yeah.
And
if you can get a diverse group, then that's the real win, isn't it?
Yeah, really good.
I mean, like, we should definitely do a doubt podcast.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
That'd be so good. Maybe we could get Rob, but no, he's not going to come, is he?
Probably
not.
He
has his own podcast called The Robcast.
He does, yeah.
Which I think is very smart.
Yeah.
Maybe this should be called The Bencast.
Mm.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't have the same ring, does it?
No.
No.
Are there any other standout bits, or should we wrap up?
There's lots, and I can't do them all. It's all interesting stuff. And one of the things he says is that nobody lives without faith. So he talks about why an atheist is a person with tremendous faith.
Mm. A belief in nothing is a belief in something.
And he said everybody believes in something. So there's a lot of concepts which, if you're new to faith or you haven't particularly had any theological education or anything, or even if you're not just really a thinking person, and a lot of Christians I meet, especially new Christians, they're desperate to do the right thing.
Yeah.
They're quite worried about getting it wrong.
Mm.
And what this book does is stop that worry. So
there's a freedom.
Yeah, and I just think you need that at the beginning of your faith journey.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was thinking about saying that earlier, and I thought, I bet Rob Bell would hate that term, faith journey.
He's not going to listen.
No, all right then. But because, of course, your faith journey starts when you're born.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But what I mean is,
but he's always talking about journeys and movements and
true. So, yeah, I take it all back. Anyway,
so,
I think
bricks,
everyone should read it.
Is
the
takeaway.
Yes. Yeah, and there's a lot of the
don't
book.
Build a wall. We don't have to get political.
Invite people to jump with you on the trampoline.
Do you know what I loved about that wall thing is that they put seesaws in it, innit? Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, so you know like Trump's wall that is built or building.
Yeah.
And they put seesaws in the middle of it.
That's great.
So that like people from either side could like play together.
Did you know that I was doing Christmas shopping online earlier today, and you know the Ladybird books for grown-ups?
I don't.
Don't you?
I
well,
don't
go
do books.
Looking.
I don't do books.
Oh, you'd like these? They're very short.
Yeah.
So Ladybird books. You're too young, aren't you, to remember Ladybird books?
I don't really know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and actually probably the people listening to the podcast won't necessarily know.
There's a ladybird in Bug's Life, and I'm unsure on the gender of that ladybird. I don't know to this day. I've actually got your copy of Bug's Life. I've still got it.
Still? Oh, we keep it. We don't need it. Oh, we're way past that.
I thought it was your favourite.
No.
Yeah,
I'm a horror movie person.
I borrowed that from your house like a long time ago.
We probably gave it to you.
Oh, thank you.
Keep it.
Oh, what a blessing.
There's not enough zombies in it for me.
Oh, no, I can't stand all that stuff. We should do a film podcast. I think we should just do more podcasts of you because I really like you.
We should do, thank you. We should do we should do a horror movie. Why it's okay for Christians to watch horror movies.
Okay, good. Because I really don't think so.
Oh.
And I'm right. Pretty liberal, but I just like,
we need
I can't
Matt Levitt
get
behind for
that.
We need Matt Levitt for that because he holds that
and,
view.
And I think, who else is into horror movies? Sophie Tapscott likes horror movies.
I can make a strong case for why it's okay to watch horror movies. Don't roll your eyes.
I know, but I just get so stressed about stuff like that. Why would anyone want to be scared for fun?
Well, why do you go on a roller coaster? Should we not get into this now?
That's scary. That's fun.
Let's not, because okay. I've got, because I can so much see where we're going.
In.
You're welcome.
And we will see. Please come again. Has it been okay?
It's been lovely.
And I think we should do, so Steve did a podcast.
Yes, I
about
know.
Him.
I'm the last Fenning.
But maybe we could do an alternate one
where
you tell us the truth
yes.
behind the man.
I can tell you a lot of things. I generally
just tell us, just leave us with one. Just leave us with one.
I don't know. I generally say I'm very nice about him behind his back.
Yeah, I think you're very honouring.
But
have we spoken about his stag do on the podcast where they put chicken feed?
Oh, and ducklings. The thing was that the ducklings were so worried that they didn't really go anywhere near him. So they had to put the ducklings on him.
Oh, those poor things.
I know.
We're going to have calls to the RSPCA. This was a long time ago. Those ducks have been eaten now.
Oh, yeah, they were. No, fine. But it was based on somebody's brother-in-law who they did the same thing, stripped him naked, covered him in squirty cream, you know, that stuff. But then they put him in with piglets. And piglets nip. So it was based on that, but this was much, much tamer.
Yeah.
I've only just thrown away the photos, actually. I think I've kept one.
Oh, I don't
one.
Want to see them. I actually don't.
I think I kept one that where he's still wearing his boxer shorts and it's not too awful because it's just so cringy. I can't bear it. They made me a T-shirt.
What did it say?
I think it had the picture of him where they'd pulled his boxer shorts down and written "To Sarah from the Boys" or something on his bum. And it's just weird, isn't it? Why do boys have to hurt each other?
I don't know.
And like, why is this that is, so hilarious?
Honestly, when he was telling me about it for the first time, or Sam was, I was absolutely dumbfounded. I was like, this must be a Suffolk thing.
Oh, it's not. It's a boy
because
thing.
Because it's so weird. It's so weird what happened. But yeah, maybe we'll do an alternative Steve Fenning podcast.
How I have to say, though, he is just really nice.
Oh, he is.
He's not a horrible person at home. He's annoying.
Mm.
But he's not horrible. He's lovely.
I think he's honestly an angel.
And yeah, I know. And that's depressing because I have to live with him.
Yeah,
so
but
I
like,
always...
he's got flaws in other ways. Like he doesn't remember when he's opened a cupboard.
Oh, I know.
So he walks into it.
Have you seen his latest
scar?
I know. I know. He does that all the time.
He's in the wars, our poor boy.
I know. One morning he got up, made me breakfast, went to Tesco, brought something back I needed, changed a tyre on my car.
Oh.
I know. And that was all like before 8 o'clock.
Oh,
and he cooked the meal for later. He just, that's what he's like.
What a darling.
I know.
We love you, Steve. Will he listen to this or will he be too scared?
I'll scare him. I'll try and, I'll wind him up.
Cool. Thanks so much. Please come again.
Pleasure.
And is there anything you need to say about Eden? No? Bye then. Oh, no. Play the music is what I say. I forgot. It's been a while. I don't know. Sorry. This will go at the end. Bye.